And now a game where we reward someone for being special by asking them about something ordinary. 50 years ago, a young architect decided to procrastinate by writing a children's book. He had his roommate, a young cartoonist named Jules Pfeiffer, do the pictures. The Phantom Tollbooth has been hailed as a classic of children's literature. It has just been released in a commemorative 50th anniversary edition and an annotated edition, and I am pleased to have its author join us now. Norton Juster, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, thank you.
Now, as anybody who knows anything about me knows, this is my favorite book ever, and I could probably recite it from memory. But for those who are fortunate in that they haven't encountered it yet, so therefore can for the first time, could you describe the book?
Well, it's a book about a little boy about 10 years old who hates school, doesn't really understand why he has to learn anything, and doesn't believe anything adults tell him and doesn't understand anything about them, and they don't understand anything about him.
This is
true. In short, it was me.
It's also me, but it's me now. That's the scary part. But go on.
Yes. He comes home from school one day, finds someone has left a big package, which is a toll booth, assembles it, goes through the toll booth, and ends up in a kind of crazy land where all rhyme and reason has been banished. And he has a series of adventures with a lot of wordplay, a lot of crazy things happening, and a lot of fun.
It just occurred to me, you were living in New York, you wrote a book about traveling through a toll booth that leaves you to a wild, strange place filled with crazy people where there's no rhyme or reason. It's a book about going to Jersey, isn't it?
It's a book about passing through Jersey.
I guess so. And you had your friend, your actual roommate in Brooklyn was Jules Pfeiffer?
Yes, we met when I was in the Navy. I had a stationing at the Brooklyn Navy Yard, and they said I could live off base. And I moved into a disreputable basement room, and he was living on the second floor. And he would look over stuff I was writing, and I'd get discouraged. And he would be a great help to me by always telling me that writing a book was a terrific way to meet girls.
How'd that work out?
Well, it didn't work out so well because I never met anybody over 11.
Yeah. What was the reaction to the book when it came out?
It was kind of unanimous. It was not a children's book. The vocabulary was too difficult for kids. The situations and the things I talked about were way out of their understanding. The wordplay and the punning, they would never get. And to top it off, they told me that it was fantasy was bad for children because it disoriented them.
Speaking as a child who liked fantasy, that was the point.
Right.
And so they told you it wasn't going to work, and then the book came out, and what happened?
Well, it began to get some very nice reviews. I think the only reason the book came out is because I did absolutely everything wrong.
How so?
A friend took it to an editor at Random House, who it turned out was not a children's book editor, which I think was probably the only reason it got published. And I had never written any kind of a book, no less a children's book, and Jules had never illustrated a children's book. And everything we did step by step was exactly wrong. It all seemed to work out perfectly. I think there's a lesson there, but I don't want to know what it is.
Exactly. I should say, when you talk about wordplay, the book is filled with these elaborate sort of tricks and games and jokes. For example, there's the cart that moves when nobody says anything because it goes without saying.
Right, exactly.
It goes to the banquet where everybody has to eat their words.
Yeah.
There's the island of conclusions, which you can only get to by jumping to conclusions. It's actually interesting because he comes back from this amazing adventure at the end of the book, and he wants to go back, and the Phantom Tollbooth is gone.
Right.
And he starts to say to himself, oh my gosh, I want to go back, and I won't be able to go back. But then he says, but you know what? This world, the real world, is so much more interesting. I don't think I'd have time to go back to the magical, wonderful place where I had these adventures, because it's so much more interesting here.
Yeah, that was my way of getting out of it, of course.
And I swear to you, I think if you can think of a 10-year-old little Jewish boy in New Jersey holding up his book and going, you're crazy! Find the toll booth! So I realize, now that I've got you, I'm like, what was he thinking, Mr. Juster? It's so much better there.
Right. But the one thing you have to understand, which I think we don't, even to this day, is that we constantly underestimate what kids will understand or what they can deal with. And I think that's what I was trying to get at in the book, that they understand a lot more, and the really fortunate ones carry that special understanding into their adulthood. And if you lose that, I think you lose something very important.
I guess that's true, and I guess I lost it. Now, The Phantom Tollbooth was made into a movie back in 1970. Did you see it? What did you think of it?
Well, I avoided it for several years because I didn't know what it was going to be like. And then I live in Amherst, Massachusetts, where University of Massachusetts is, and one day there was a little notice in the paper that the film club was putting on a double feature. And the first was a horror film called Buckets of Blood. And the second was The Phantom Tollbooth.
Sure, why not?
Well, I got all the way through Buckets of Blood, but I only lasted about 20 minutes.
Really? Why? What was wrong?
Right. Well, it was just very different than the way I had visualized it, and I think every author probably hates the films that are made of his work. So it's
crazy. It's like it's the 50th anniversary of the publication of The Phantom Tollbooth. That seems
years?
Impossible. 50 years. Well, it came out.
I wrote it when I was four.
And what a precocious young man you were. All right, Norton Juster, what a pleasure to have you here. We've invited you here to play a game we're calling...
Let's call it the Phantom Something. Kids love that.
I'll take that, yes.
So you wrote The Phantom Tollbooth, which is universally loved. George Lucas made The Phantom Menace, which is universally hated, but made a boatload of money. Go figure.
Okay.
We're going to ask you three questions about The Phantom Menace. Get two questions right, you'll win our prize. We won our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice, on the home answering machine. Carl, who is author Norton Juster playing for?
He is playing for Eileen Fordonsky of White Salmon, Washington.
Well, I hope I don't fail her, so.
It's all right. It's an adventure. Have you ever seen The Phantom Menace, by the way?
No.
Oh, great. Now, George Lucas, the director, of course, was known for his high-tech approach to filmmaking. For example, the communicating device that Liam Neeson's character uses in the film is actually what? Is it A, an Apple iPhone, almost a decade before it was officially invented, B, a painted-over empty soda can, or C, a modified Sensor Excel razor for women?
Let's see which one it will be. I think it was the iPhone.
The iPhone? An Apple iPhone 10 years before it was invented?
Sure.
Why not? Actually, it was the razor. It was the Sensor XL razor for women.
I knew that all along.
The tell is when Liam Neeson uses it at one key point to shave his legs. All right, next question. The lead in the film was played by a young boy named Jake Lloyd. He was 10 when the movie was released. The movie changed his life, of course. What was the next stage of his career? A, he recreated the role in a musical version of The Phantom Menace that played for 8 years in Branson, Missouri. B, he quit acting entirely because he got teased so much by kids who made lightsaber noises when he walked by. Or C, he changed his name to Zac Efron and has done pretty well for himself.
I think I'm going to lose again here. I think it was probably the first one.
That he went to Branson, Missouri to perform in a musical version of The Phantom Menace.
It sounds like something I would do.
So you're sure about that one, are you?
I'm not sure about anything. I'll change it then.
All right. I just want you to remember how much I love that book. That's basically what I'm saying.
You've rallied the support of the crowd, Norton.
Well, I'll take the second one, then.
You're going to take that he got teased?
Yeah.
You're right. Lloyd told a British tabloid that he got so tired of the teasing that he quit acting and threw out all his Star Wars toys. Last question. The movie was notorious for the character of Jar Jar Binks, a computer-generated alien that everyone hated. Critic Joe Morgenstern of The Wall Street Journal called the character what? A Rastafarian step-and-fetch-it on platform hooves crossed annoyingly with Butterfly McQueen. B, the cinematic equivalent of having a dull nails pounded into your forehead. Or C, the most tragic thing to happen in a movie theater since Shoah.
I'll take number three.
I should have known you'd go right for the Holocaust humor. I should have... Knowing your work as I do, I should have anticipated that would be your... You sure you don't want to pick again, maybe?
Okay, I pick number one.
There you go.
Very good. You're right, yes.
Wait a minute, have you got a number four?
No. It's too late, you've already... You can't give a man a gift some days. Carl, how did Norton Juster do in our quiz?
Norton had two correct answers, so he wins. He wins for Eileen Fordonsky.
It never occurred to me for all those years I was reading and enjoying your book that someday I would end up desperately helping you cheat. Norton Juster is the author of The Phantom Tollbooth, the classic of children's literature, now out in a 50th anniversary edition. Norton Juster, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it.
Bye-bye.